That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride.
All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom. It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
What do you want from me? I'm not a married sweetheart.
For goodness sake, kid, keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not a married sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
And welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Andy Fry. Happy to be with you here today. And it's the last day of the Republican convention tonight. The headliner, former President Donald Trump, joining us from the convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Missouri's Secretary of State and candidate for Governor Jay Ashcroft. Thank you for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me. It has been a great pleasure to be a part of the Republican National Convention here in Wisconsin.
Oh, I can imagine. And Milwaukee is a really nice city, by the way. And, you know, I know a little bit about Milwaukee. I spent some time there. And I remember, you know, they're Democrats and the mayor is a Democrat. But I remember when it was announced that the Republican National Convention was coming to the city, they said, this is fantastic for us. You know, we don't care about the ideology or anything like that. We're not going to fight all the money and the good people coming to our town. So I was really impressed they handled it the right way. I don't know if Chicago would handle Republicans the same way.
No, I don't think they would. And I think Chicago needs a lot of lessons about the rule of law and enforcing it and putting citizens above lawbreakers. But it's been great to be up there.
Right. All right. So let's talk about the Republican convention. A lot of people are talking about the energy. It sounds like people there are very much energized. There is this story in The Hill. I'm going to read you the first part. And it says, President Biden testing positive for COVID-19 offers grim counter programming to an energetic Republican National Convention, during which former President Trump is set to give his first speech Thursday since surviving an assassination attempt. And essentially, a lot of the commentators are pointing out the juxtaposition of what you're seeing right now between the two parties, Republicans and Democrats. One is grim, one is energetic and exciting. Tell me about what does it feel like to be at the convention this week? Does it feel that exciting on the ground?
It is exciting. It is electric. It is unified. You know, Republicans always have a more difficult time being unified because we're individuals. We think of ideas. We don't just do what was always done and take our marching orders from the government like the Democrats do. And yet everyone is just aligned in the fact that we've got to get rid of Joe Biden and we've got to put President Donald J. Trump back in the White House. No one, not even including Joe Biden, is better off now than they were 4 years ago.
Well, we'll get to Donald Trump, but did you get to see the speech from J.D. Vance last night? And if you did, what'd you think?
I thought it was great. You know, I honestly don't think it matters who the vice presidential candidate is because of Donald Trump. I think he's going to win, and he's going to win going away regardless. But I think J.D. Vance really enhances that ticket. I think he is a very good fit for what Donald J. Trump wants to do and what he has done in the past. So there was a lot of excitement. And when he introduced his mother and talked about what they had gone through, I mean, it just it was great. It was there wasn't a dry eye at the convention.
Oh, fantastic. I remember that part. Talking about sobriety and, you know, really, you think about all the different problems we've had with drugs across this country, the opioid epidemic. And, you know, I will point out during the Trump administration, he really was going hard to try to stop this. And, you know, there's so many different aspects to it. It's about charging the people that are out there drug dealing. It's about holding accountability to the people that are supplying these things. It's about stopping the supply coming in from other countries and these other countries that, you know, are destroying America by flooding it in here. And but, you know, it just keeps getting worse because there's nothing serious taken about the drug problem in the United States since Joe Biden took office. So, you know, I think that's something we don't talk about as much anymore. And maybe J.D. Vance will bring that to the forefront again.
I think he will. I think he should. You know, the drug overdose problem, it's the number one killer of individuals from the ages of 18 to 45. There are things that can be done to at least make it less of a problem, like shutting down the border, stopping the illegal immigration, quitting, you know, not allowing the cartels to run illegal immigrants across the border and use them as drug mules. That was being done. We were doing what needed to be done under President Trump. And really the first thing that Joe Biden did was wipe away those executive orders that were actually protecting Americans, that were stopping that illegality, that criminality at the border. And we've got to get back to saying, no, we're going to put the people of America first.
Yeah, I think one of the big contrasts we're seeing now, if you go back during the Trump administration, it was, hey, if you're caught dealing this stuff and you put fentanyl in a drug and someone dies, you can be charged with their murder because you're responsible for supplying that, versus where we are today, which is, you know, what we need to do is really just make sure everyone has Narcan on them 24/7 so we can revive them. That's the answer. You know, not stopping it, but just making sure we can treat it. That's the problem, you know, in a lot of different ways when it comes to drugs, because then, you know, you're just enabling more and more people exactly. to continue to get hooked on it. It's terrible. Jay Ashcroft joining us here, Missouri Secretary of State. What are you looking forward to tonight for Donald Trump's speech?
You know, I don't know what he's going to say. There have been a lot of reports that he has completely redone his speech after he was shot and then got back up and said, I'm never going to stop fighting for you. But I'm just, frankly, I just can't imagine the electricity. I can't imagine the emotion when he strides out there on the stage to give out his agenda, his vision to be the next world leader as the United States president. I mean, we had so much good with him for 4 years, then we lost him, and now he's back. That place is going to explode. He's come out on the floor a couple of times, just briefly, like to walk to his seats. It's going to be louder than a Taylor Swift concert when he comes out.
Very good. You know, part of the messaging of this convention, I've heard people talk about the convention, and they said that eyes are starting to open and minds are starting to change about the Republican Party as a whole. They're saying there's this somewhat new orientation. So in the past, Democrats made it sound like they were exclusively for the working people. They're the working people's party. But I think over the last 4 years, we realized very quickly that the party of Joe Biden has not been working for them. And a lot of times they go back and say, well, we were doing a lot better under Donald Trump. Maybe he is the working person's party. And that is kind of like the, okay, people are starting to catch up to that idea, I guess, in the mainstream. And they're not fighting it as much because they're realizing their lives aren't as good the last 4 years. Are you seeing that too? Does it feel like there's this new orientation direction with the party?
Oh, yes, I think there is. I think there's a greater realization. I think there are people that for decades had been taught that Democrats were for the working class, and they just believed that. And now, after decades of the Democrats promising but never delivering, after the Democrats creating the inflation that we see where blue-collar workers are having to work extra hours, they're having to work an extra job, they're working overtime, they're not able to buy what they used to buy just a year ago, they're realizing that what they're hearing from Democrats just isn't true, and that Republicans actually care about them, that Republicans want every child in this country to be able to get a challenging education. They want everyone in this country to be able to be entrepreneurial if they want, and when they work hard, to keep the rewards, to reap the rewards of their hard work, because we want low taxes, and we want to get government out of their way. And that's why you're seeing people in other communities that have historically just voted for Democrats. They're saying, you know what, we're going to vote for Donald J. Trump because he made things better for us.
Yeah, I think a lot of people here listening today want to see Donald Trump back in office. And you're a candidate for governor here in Missouri. Let's say you become governor. I'm guessing there's a lot of work you can do for Missouri when you're working with someone like Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot easier if you don't have to work against the federal government all the time. I know as Secretary of State, it was so much easier to push election ideas and election integrity when I didn't have to worry about the federal government pushing back, when I could work with Donald Trump and his Election Integrity Commission and things like that. That was so much easier than having to fight with the Department of Justice, literally having to kick them out of our polling places in November of 2022 in Cole County because they thought they were above the law. I would love to be able to work with Donald J. Trump, but regardless of who it is, I will never stop fighting for the people of this state.
So let's talk about what in the state of Missouri, what still needs to be done. What are some of your big things you would like to get done that would even be easier if Donald Trump was in office?
Well, number one, we've got to put parents in charge of education. This idea that faceless bureaucrats, unelected individuals know better how to educate your children, what their needs are, is preposterous. We need parents to be in charge of that money. If the local public school is good for their kids, that money just goes there and pays for their tuition. But if there's a better opportunity, a better place for their children, they want to homeschool, they want to go to a charter school, a private school, mom and dad should make that decision. We talk about local control all the time. The best local control for education is mom and dad. And then secondly, we need to get crime under control. We need to support law and order. We need to support our officers. We need Missouri to be the destination for officers that are working in blue states and saying, why are we doing this? Let's go someplace where we can do our job and actually help the people where we live. Let's bring them to Missouri. Let's get 1,000 new officers on the street. Let's make sure we have truth in sentencing. So when you do the crime, you do the time. Let's make sure that we have a special prosecutor law so we can get special prosecutors appointed. And we also make a modify that so if a prosecutor won't do their job, we can throw them out. We're not going to pay them to coddle criminals and not do their job. And then finally, for the top three, our state budget has virtually doubled in the last 7 years. That's just morally reprehensible. We need to get rid of tax hike Mike's 12.5 cent per gallon gas tax hike, and then we need to move Missouri to having zero state income tax. That's $8.5 billion we need to start returning back to the people and never taking. We need to quit penalizing people for working and subsidizing people, including illegal aliens. We need to quit subsidizing them for not working in our state.
Wow. Something you mentioned right off the bat, the education side of it. And a lot of states, including the state where I'm at in Michigan, the legislature did something really strange. They decided, you know what, instead of funding schools based on a per pupil basis, we're going to put all the money in a pot and then we're going to pay it to the schools based on their current payroll. So essentially, I think they're trying to prevent what's like happening in Missouri, where you can take that money with you, which, you know, so many different parents, they're concerned. They want to make sure their kids have the best education, and they may decide that the public school is the best. They may decide somewhere else is the best. If they take them somewhere else, that money should be able to follow them because you want that kid to have what's best for them. Now, other states are trying to block ideas like that, like what I just saw, and they can do it on the legislative side. So that's why I think it's so important. You got to have someone in there that is openly thinking about what's in the best interest of these kids, not in the best interest of bureaucracy, excuse me. And that's what scares me, too, is that if you're not protecting these sort of people, like the Republican Party has been doing lately, then things continue to get worse. And that's why you got to have these stopgaps.
They will continue to get worse. And we have to act like Republicans. We cannot expect people to continue to elect Republicans if we don't actually do what we say we would do. We need to return integrity to public service. You know, it's become understood that politicians and elected officials lie. We should quit allowing that. We should start holding our candidates and our elected officials accountable. And if they lie to us, we should send them home.
Yep. Well, if people wanted to look you up online and maybe they heard some things you were talking about here, they want to learn more about it, where can they look?
Jay Ashcroft Mo on X, AshcroftForMissouri.com, or AshcroftForMissouri on Facebook.
Any good restaurants that you've eaten at in Milwaukee during the convention?
You know, I'm at a neat place right now called the Safe House, which is kind of a spy and intrigue type place. Seems cool.
You know, I've been there before. Now, there's a secret way out of it. Have they told you about that yet?
No, what is it?
Okay, make sure you got a quarter or something. There's a phone booth in there. You put the quarter in the phone booth, it gives you a special message, and it's a secret way out. It's fantastic. All right, so just so you know, it's a little bit strange, but the whole place is kind of strange. It's worth the experience
cool.
to try it. And you know, like,
thank
you know, famous
you
people, Jay yeah. Ashcroft, Missouri Secretary of State candidate for Governor of Missouri, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And you can always, if you miss some of that interview or some part of it, here's what you could do. It's very easy. You could get the Odyssey app, just use the rewind feature on the app or the website, and you can go back to the start of that. It happened at about 107 or so. All right. When we come back, Representative Mike Bost is a congressman for Illinois' 12th District, chair of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. You can find him online as well. And it's kind of interesting. There was a recent story that Joe Biden was getting nasty with a Bronze Star Democrat that was, you know, just kind of like on the call. What you're seeing a lot of reassurances that, you know, their candidate, their person, the leader of their party is competent. So they have to go and reassure and then convince their own people who have supported them in the past. But sometimes these calls just take a complete left turn. So we're going to talk to him about that coming up, too. I'm Ryan Recker filling in. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to 97.1 FM Talk. We're going to be joined by Representative Mike Bostier soon, and he's a chair of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. Some interesting stories coming out, including this one, rambling Biden gets nasty with Bronze Star Democrat on Zoom call. I'll ask him about that. Also, I brought this up with Ryan Wiggins earlier, and I saw this one story about how MSNBC is not at the Republican convention. However, they're trying to give the impression that they are there. They're sitting behind a desk, and behind them, of course, is the wall TV to make it look like it's the convention down below them, kind of where the press would normally sit or some of these other networks would be sitting. I wonder why MSNBC's list of anchors would not want to be inside of that convention in Milwaukee. Instead, they're broadcasting from their studio in Manhattan, a live feed of the convention floor projected onto the LED screen behind them. And the arrangement, I'm going to read this part of the article, several veteran television news producers described as unorthodox, was created something of a trope. Casual glance at the screen would suggest MSNBC's top anchors were covering the convention in person, but they're not. Here's, I guess there's a couple of different ways to look at it. One, do they really need to be there? You know, does their disdain, could you ever win them over? Could you ever get them to, I guess, be unbiased in their reporting? Is it really a loss for the Republicans in Milwaukee to say that Rachel Maddow and Jen Psaki are not there at the convention? No. I think a lot of times that you want that access because let's say you are another news agency. You want to be able to say, oh, look, here's so-and-so. J.D. Vance is coming up to Radio Row. Let's grab J.D. Vance real quick. Oh, look who over here is, this senator here. Is that congressman there? Oh, let's bring that chubby dog up here and get it on camera. You know, it's different when you're inside the building. It does change things than when you're at a studio. It's kind of like, have you ever seen in Major League Baseball during COVID, they said, we're not going to send the play-by-play team out because, you know, that's how it works. What we're going to do is we're going to set television screens in front of them. And they'll broadcast from the studio, and then we'll pipe in the live feed of the crowd to make it sound like they're there live. And it was just all this like theatrics and fakeness that went around with it. And it does change it. Even though they're professionals, when you're there, it does change the way that you present yourself or perform in front of a camera. It gives you sometimes a little bit more energy. Sometimes you can turn around and see something with your own eyes and commentate on it because you're there. You can hear something and say, you know what, we're kind of hearing what something's going on over here, and they might be able to present that, bring it to it. I was hoping that they would understand there's value in that. They don't, because in a lot of ways, it's probably very scripted in the things that they're saying. They're probably doing these cutaways. They have their writers, their producers, or whatever, already predetermined what they're going to say in their hatred for, you know, Donald Trump. So it's not really a loss. Is our guest Representative Boss available yet? No. Oh, that's a bummer. I was hoping I'd be able to talk to him. Maybe I'll bring up this one story real quick. Oh, we're working on getting him. Okay, that's good. And this is from the Daily Beast. Joe Biden got nasty at times in a tense Zoom meeting with dozens of moderate Democratic lawmakers who called his viability on the presidential ticket into question on Saturday. Part of this interview that Joe Biden just did with Lester Holt is that they asked him about his age, of course, and Joe Biden, in his whispering, basically said, it's okay to ask questions, but hey, don't worry, I'm great. You know, I've never felt better. I'm as, you know, he tells all these lines or whatever to make it sound like he's with it. But in all reality, we know he's not. We know that there's definitely a huge decline over the years, and we're at the point where it's so noticeable that even his biggest supporters are telling him to step aside. That's how noticeable it is. But ultimately, they're not going to force him out. They're probably trying to think of any way to convince him out. Reverse psychology, maybe. But first of all, this is what he said during part of this call. There was a representative from Colorado named Jason Crow, former Army Ranger who served three tours in the Middle East, found himself on a personal attack from Joe Biden, as reported by, see what this agency's called, Puck.com. Not familiar with them, but Daily Beast is the one that wrote this up. It says, first of all, I think you're dead wrong on national security, President said to Crow. You said what happened recently in terms of the meeting we had with NATO. I put NATO together. Name me a foreign leader who thinks I'm not the most effective leader in the world on foreign policy. Tell me who the blank that is. And then Biden's response got personal to Jason Crow, a former Army Ranger, and said, tell me something you've never done with your bronze star like my son. This is a common thread with Joe Biden. He'll speak to these family members who lost a loved one. And a lot of times it's because of his negligence, like Afghanistan, and his terrible calls for it. And then he'll go in there and say, condolences for the loss of your loved one, but let me tell you about my loss. Makes it about him. It's so disrespectful. And he couldn't help himself, knowing that Representative Crow was an Army Ranger, to make it about himself again, to say, you're not like my son. Even though you won the Bronze Star, you're not like my son. Totally disrespectful. I don't know how you would support him after something like that. Joining us now is a U.S. Congressman out of Illinois, the 12th District, Chair of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, Representative Mike Boss. Thank you so much for joining us in St. Louis.
Well, no, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
So are you in Milwaukee?
I'm actually in Milwaukee. I'm actually standing out right outside of the convention center and all the where they have the media row and the all the displays and many of the restaurants and everything like that. It's a kind of a sunny but cool day, kind of perfect day, as long as you stay in the shade a little bit. And been quite an event so far, and we're going to finish it up tonight.
Milwaukee is a really nice city. In fact, I've been there a few times, and it is very pleasant. And they got a lot of great things going for it. So I got to say, like the Republican Party right now, there's a lot of energy in this convention. There was a story in The Hill. And basically, I think they summed it up. The juxtaposition right now is night and day between the two parties when it comes to Republicans and Democrats and what Joe Biden's campaign is going through. So tell me about the atmosphere, what it's feeling like for Republicans now.
It is really a united feeling. And I've been to several of the conventions over the years. You know, quite often they're in disarray. You don't know who the nominee is going to be. You know, things like that. That's not the case here. Everything, and what's really wild is we got all of the actual legal work done on the first session of the nomination and everything like that, and every but the nomination, got the second done on the second session. And then normally they don't do that until, like, late last night or early today. So we've been, you know, we had the ability to do it early. They did it early. That means that everybody's just talking in a positive way. You put with that the vice president nominee came up in time, where a lot faster than it normally does, and it was a good announcement. And when I tell you that the unity is the best way I can describe it, but I've got a feeling that the way that we're hearing right now, I'm pretty sure when you mentioned it, the Democrats, they're not sure who their nominee is going to be, but I don't know how they walk away from the fact that delegates have already voted, or delegates have already been elected.
Yeah. I got to tell you, too, we're talking about former President Trump's first speech since the assassination attempt on Saturday. The signs are he had a prepared speech that was ripped up. He's going to take a different direction for it. It sounds like tonight's going to be a very powerful moment, not just for the former president and hopefully the next president, but also a very powerful moment for this country.
I believe it is. And the reason why is we've always said, you know, people that have trouble with Trump, a lot of people have trouble with Trump, they have trouble with personality. And it doesn't mean that I think he's going to change how aggressive he is or anything like that. But it will be interesting at least to see how he might change the direction in which he presents his message once you have had a situation where you were so close to losing your life. I've seen that affect a lot of people in my life, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. He's been handling, I think, everything well. Even though before the assassination attempt, if you saw his demeanor in the debate, it was quite different there. So it should be very, very, I think, issue-oriented. Will he still make barbs about certain people in the Democrat Party? Yeah, but will they be the old Trump thing that we used to see that all of a sudden fired up the Democrats and everything like that? I don't know. It'll be interesting to watch it.
In your capacity in Congress, have you had a chance to meet J.D. Vance or work with him at all in the past?
I actually have not, per se. We met in passing, like a group meeting. But not had a chance to sit down and talk with him. However, before he ever became a member of Congress, before he became a member of Senate, I had already read his book. And wow, what an amazing life where he has, and then where he's accomplished to come to.
That's pretty amazing. So you have the big speech tonight wrapping up the Republican convention in Milwaukee. What do you think the best message would be for people watching? What do you think the right message is? Because a lot of people are looking at it and they're saying the party is a new orientation. You're there for the working people that have been abandoned by Joe Biden.
Yeah.
So what do you think the right message the people of America need to take away from this?
The right message is this. The previous administration has got it all wrong. We need to make sure we control our borders. We need to bring down inflation. We need to bring more jobs back to this United States, and we need to make sure we become energy independent again. We need to send a clear message that we have a strong leader in the White House that can make decisions to try to send a clear message to those would-be countries that either are already in a war situation or are threatening to be in a war situation, and make them stand down to the power of strength that and unity that we, the United States, will show at that point. We also need to make sure that we continue that we will encourage law-abiding citizens to come into this nation. And then we've got to figure out, after we secure our border, on how to clean up the problem of the amount of immigrants that have come across illegally. And that won't happen overnight, but those other things, in a short period of time with administration heading the right way. And I want to see, because as a VA chair, I want to see administrations of agencies and agencies that follow the law that is passed by Congress, not just think that those things are suggestions.
You're talking about the VA chair, and did you see the recent comments that Joe Biden made on that Zoom call to the Bronze Star Democrat? Have you seen that one?
Yeah. Yeah. I actually heard your comments just earlier, and that's the problem. It really is always about him. And you know what? I was very, very emotional last night when those veterans or those Gold Star parents talked about the 13. I was so that the frustration as a military person that has ever been in the military, and believe me, with my job, I talk to a lot of veterans that they felt, and that the frustration and anger that they felt when we blew that Afghanistan withdrawal and we endangered our military personnel that didn't need to be endangered. When you are a family, and I wouldn't even know, okay? I want to say this. I would not know what it's like to lose a child in a combat zone or any way, shape, or form lose a child. But I know what it was like as a father who, though I had been a Marine and in Marine, but not an active at the time, when my son went over to Afghanistan or to Iraq, I walked up with him to the TSA check station at the airport, and it was one of the worst days of my life. And to think that the biggest fear is you're always worried that they won't come home. And once that would happen, I could not imagine how a parent could feel. And that is why when talking to our Gold Star families, if you've never experienced, don't try to go where they are. Just tell them you're going to pray with them where they are, because none of us can understand unless we lose a child.
It's one of those situations. I think about this in my own life, and you know, I'm a Christian. I have faith. And I think, wow, to think the different tests and the struggles that some of these families have gone through, sometimes I sit there and I pray and I say, I don't know if I'm strong enough to be tested, because I see what some of these other families have gone through. And I think I don't want to find out what happens to me in a situation like that, the pain and the sorrow, and you have to sit with that on your shoulders, and you those random moments where you're not thinking about it, and then you think about it. And the one thing I know, and it just tears me apart when I hear these stories about Joe Biden, he'll go to talk to some of these people and he'll make it about himself. And it just, I think to myself, how could you do that to these families?
Yeah. Sometimes as a person in authority that can actually, if you can make things better, then you want to listen and see how you can make it better. If you know that you can't make it better, quietly sit and listen, and just listen. Mm-hmm. You don't have to put your own words in there, except, I'm sorry, I wish I could change it. I can't imagine what you're going through. You know, you said that, you know, you're a person of faith, but in the scripture it says, and that's always such a misquote, but it says that God will never give us more than we can bear. No, that's not what it says. He says he doesn't give us more than that he will not be there for.
Right.
And that's the important thing. Sometimes it is more than we can bear. And
yeah, absolutely.
You wish it isn't the case. And I just, like I said, losing a loved one, as far as if it's a spouse or a child, it is. And like I said, don't be a politician when dealing with that. Be a caring human being, and understand right. that they're going through, they're hurting. And if you're in a position, that's like with the VA. If there's an opportunity and there's a benefit or something that's out there that they're operating not getting, and I instantly say that, then I'll take them off the side or talk to them right then and go, hey, let us talk to you. We can help here. I can't fix it, but maybe I can make it a little bit easier on things that we can fix, you know, and that's what right. they really need. They don't need somebody to say, well, yeah, but you know, let me tell you how bad my life is. That doesn't do it. Right.
Right. That's why you're the chair of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, because I think you understand that, and that's fantastic. On Facebook, Rep. Bost, on Twitter, at Rep. Bost, Representative Mike Bost, U.S. Congressman, Illinois 12th District. Thank you so much for joining us here in St. Louis.
Thank you for having me on, and thank you, and everybody enjoy what's going to happen tonight in the speech.
It was a big one. I think he's on stage 9 o'clock is roughly the time he'll be on. It's a big one tonight. The end of the Republican convention. Representative Mike Bost, Congressman in Illinois' 12th District. So I'm Ryan Record. Filling in. Thank you. For Annie Fry, you're listening to 97.1 FM Talk. Ryan Wiggins, welcome back.
Hopefully
you got some work done. Did you have some Reese's Pieces or some sort of buttercups?
No, I lament that. I did have a granola bar.
Oh, okay. Not as exciting, really.
No, it's much
drier.
It looks like it's more healthy, but really when you add as much sugar as they do to those things, why don't I just eat a Snickers?
Yeah, you might as well. So we had some really great interviews there, and I really enjoyed them. But I'm going to go back to that one story on the Hill. Biden's health offers grim counter-programming to the RNC. You know, I never really considered that until this one piece that came out by Alex Gancitano, but basically says, look at the juxtaposition here. You have a bunch of energized Republicans in Milwaukee for their convention, very excited. They get to announce their vice presidential nominee, which is J.D. Vance, who's going to be running mate of Donald Trump, who gets the big speech tonight. On the counter side, you have a party that's trying to get their leader to step down, won't step down, gets COVID. And there couldn't be a bigger contrast between the two different candidates for president of the United States right now. And I think it was Van Jones. Van Jones is coming up with some good quotes lately, isn't he? He says, today is a terrible day. If you pull it back and look at this thing, strength versus weakness, a bullet couldn't stop Trump, a virus just stopped Biden. And that is the compare and contrast between the two parties. Normally, you would hope that this was happening closer to the election day. We're still pretty far out. We're like 110 days away or something like that. 109. I forgot what the exact number is. But I know anything can change between now and then. But man, it could not look worse for the Democratic Party right now.
I'm going to ask you a question based on the news, because this broke yesterday about this time. You know, we were on the air when we heard, oh, he's got COVID. He's going to be dropping out of events and things. And so we were reporting that. I don't know that we actually discussed this, though, which has become, of course, the topic of discussion. Mm-hmm. Is COVID, let's put COVID aside. Put it aside that whether he actually has COVID or not, because everybody's speculating. Everybody's speculating. Well, does he actually have COVID?
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So let's just put that debate aside and say, regardless of whether he does or not, is this a ruse or an opportunity, whichever one, for him to step out of the public limelight and then, you know, say, oh, you know, this was an opportunity. Like, I had to really examine my health here. So this would be step one of him moving out of the nomination. Or is it the opposite, where he's stepping out of the limelight and he gets a free 7 to 10 days here where he doesn't have to do any interviews? And then he's a week and a half closer to the nomination.
You know what? Until you said that, I never once questioned if he had COVID or not. My mind went in a different direction. My mind went, wow, what a contrast between when Donald Trump got it and now when Joe Biden has got it. When Donald Trump got it, people were like celebrating. It was, this is what you get, you know, the type of, they were like happy in a way. It was actually really sad. And he came back and, we can go back and revisit this later. But to go back to your other question, I think that he's bitter. He's an old man and he's stubborn. He just doesn't want to step aside. I don't think this is them trying to transition him out like it's some sort of planned. We're going to try to script this in a way that is logical and a way that people will buy it. I don't think that's the case. I just think that he honestly probably got COVID and he's continuing to do these interviews and the interviews are not flattering to him. They're exactly how you think they would go and people aren't liking him anymore. So it's not going to hurt him being away. In fact, he's going to go back to the basement strategy that he took back in this 2020 election that, you know, seemed to work out for him in some ways.
I'm looking at the calendar here. If he does, let's say he quarantines for 7 days, or you could go even further and go to 10. I don't even know what the protocols are because I thought he was vaccinated. I didn't know you could get COVID when you were vaccinated, and I know he is. But apparently you can. I didn't know that. I'm not a doctor. but let's say that he does use this full quarantine, which he will. You know, he's not going to do interviews for the next week. I don't think you see him pretty much the entire Monday through Friday of next week, nor the end of this week, obviously. That means that he gets all the way through July 29th before he may even start doing this again.
Wow.
So that is an amazing free pass for him. And he really, now you said this earlier, that it had been that they were going to do this nominating virtually at the beginning of August, which was mm-hmm. August 7th or something like that. If mm-hmm. that were the case, then you're literally only about a week out from that nomination.
Right. At that point. Now that puts them, I mean, the Democrats in a really tough spot. So essentially, they're thinking to themselves, we got to really work on him and chip away this idea that it's best for him, like to put this and plant this idea into his mind that you could be a statesman and step aside and do the service to your country by stepping aside. And of course, do the service to your party, which is really what they really mean by that. They don't, I think, care about the other thing. But now, if he is in quarantine protocol, they're not going to get to him. They're going to have 10 or 7 days less to chip away at him, and he's going to come back probably feeling a little bit more refreshed, giving him the false hope that he really doesn't need to step aside. This may actually be a really bad thing for the ones that are trying to convince him to step aside. This is going to be really difficult for the change his mind now.
And it controls the messaging too. People could still text him, but he's not going to be, nobody's going to be meeting with him. You know, he's going to be completely isolated with probably just Jill, the only one talking to him for the next week.
Yeah, well, I mean, he takes like 3 or 4 day weekends anyway, where no one talks to him. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's like basically a double weekend for him.
Yeah, very true. But still, no interviews, no nothing. And so, yeah, I really do believe that this is, regardless of whether COVID or whatever it is, this is an opportunity for him or a plan for him, whichever way you want to look at it, for him to step out. And this is the opposite. So this is like right wing. You know, Twitter has been saying, oh, this is him getting ready to step down. And I really think it's the opposite. This is him hunkering down, and really everybody around him hunkering down around him to say, no, 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 no. He's fine. He just has to get through this next week or so, and then he'll get back on the campaign trail, and then it'll be really too late to do anything about it.
Yeah, I think his campaign has said they're mild symptoms. And he's not stepping down. Like, those are the two things, the only things that they've said by this.
Yeah.
Now, keep in mind, he's 81, 80, yeah. 81. Has he turned 81 yet? I get it mixed up sometimes.
I think it's November that he turns 82.
Oh, 82. Got it. Yeah. Okay. Not good at that age. Anyone that age getting COVID, that's a terrible thing, because the older you are, the harder it is to shake off. I mean, anything could happen between now and then, but he does have the world's best doctors working on him, which is a good thing, but still not a great thing to have to battle. So to say this quarantine lasts 7 days, it could very last longer.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And you know what? Who knows? Maybe while he's on the beach, he says, is this really worth it? Maybe that's how he has his change of heart. I doubt it. Again, he's old and stubborn and does not want to give that power up that he worked for, quote unquote. So I think the Democrats have just pretty much now realized they just locked in Joe Biden because there's nothing they can do unless they do it by force against his will, which they don't want to do.
Yeah, here's the couple headlines you're referring to. Biden tests positive for COVID, cancels events amid symptoms. White House says Biden unmoved by discussions with Schumer and Jeffries. And then Biden campaign sees no change in odds of him being nominee. So I think you and I are in the minority because a lot of people are saying, no, this is how he starts to step out. But I don't think so.
I wonder if he got it here in Detroit. He was just here on Friday, possibly. I think there's a chance that it happened there. Who knows? All right, we got another hour of the Annie Fry Show. If you want to hop online real quick, the YouTube live chat poll, America's Best Days Ahead or Behind Us. Got some more time to do that. You can find me online, Ryan Recker Radio, at Ryan Recker on Twitter. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to 97.1 FM Talk. Listening to 97.1 FM Talk. Ryan Wiggins, welcome back.
Thank you.
You got some work done. Did you have some Reese's Pieces or some sort of buttercups?
No, I lament that. I did have a granola bar.
Okay, not as exciting, really.
No, it's much
drier.
It looks like it's more healthy, but really when you add as much sugar as they do to those things, why don't I just eat a Snickers?
Yeah, you might as well. So we had some really great interviews there, and I really enjoyed them. But I'm going to go back to that one story on the Hill. Biden's health offers grim counter-programming to the RNC. You know, I never really considered that until this one piece that came out by Alex Gancitano. But basically says, look at the juxtaposition here. You have a bunch of energized Republicans in Milwaukee for their convention. Very excited. They get to announce their vice presidential nominee, which is J.D. Vance. He's going to be running mate of Donald Trump, who gets the big speech tonight. On the counter side, you have a party that's trying to get their leader to step down, won't step down, gets COVID. And there couldn't be a bigger contrast between the two different candidates for president of the United States right now. And I think it was Van Jones. Van Jones is coming up with some good quotes lately, isn't he? He says, today is a terrible day. If you pull it back and look at this thing, strength versus weakness, a bullet couldn't stop Trump. A virus just stopped Biden. And that is the compare and contrast between the two parties. Normally, you would hope that this was happening closer to the election day. We're still pretty far out. We're like 110 days away or something like that. 109, I forgot what the exact number is, but I know anything can change between now and then, but man, it could not look worse for the Democratic Party right now.
I'm going to ask you a question based on the news, because this broke yesterday about this time. You know, we were on the air when we heard, oh, he's got COVID, he's going to be dropping out of events and things, and so we were reporting that. I don't know that we actually discussed this, though, which has become, of course, the topic of discussion. Mm-hmm. Is COVID... Let's put COVID aside. Put it aside that whether he actually has COVID or not, because everybody's speculating. Everybody's speculating. What, does he actually have COVID?
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So let's just put that debate aside and say, regardless of whether he does or not, is this a ruse or an opportunity, whichever one, for him to step out of the public limelight and then, you know, say, oh, you know, this was an opportunity. Like, I had to really examine my health here. So this is would be step one of him moving out of the nomination. Or is it the opposite, where he's stepping out of the limelight and he gets a free 7 to 10 days here where he doesn't have to do any interviews? And then he's a week and a half closer to the nomination.
You know what? Until you said that, I never once questioned if he had COVID or not. My mind went in a different direction. My mind went, wow, what a contrast between when Donald Trump got it and now when Joe Biden has got it. When Donald Trump got it, people were like celebrating. It was, this is what you get, you know, the type of, they were like happy in a way. It was actually really sad. And he came back and, we can go back and revisit this later. But to go back to your other question, I think that he's bitter. He's an old man and he's stubborn. He just doesn't want to step aside. I don't think this is them trying to transition him out like it's some sort of planned. We're going to try to script this in a way that is logical and a way that people will buy it. I don't think that's the case. I just think that he honestly probably got COVID And he's continuing to do these interviews, and the interviews are not flattering to him. They're exactly how you think they would go. And people aren't liking him anymore. So it's not going to hurt him being away. In fact, he's going to go back to the basement strategy that he took back in this 2020 election that, you know, seemed to work out for him in some ways.
I'm looking at the calendar here. If he does, let's say he quarantines for 7 days, or you could go even further and go to 10. I don't even know what the protocols are because I thought he was vaccinated. I didn't know you could get COVID when you were vaccinated, and I know he is. But apparently you can. I didn't know that. I'm not a doctor. but let's say that he does use this full quarantine, which he will. You know, he's not going to do interviews for the next week. I don't think you see him pretty much the entire Monday through Friday of next week, nor the end of this week, obviously. That means that he gets all the way through July 29th before he may even start doing this again.
Wow.
So that is an amazing free pass for him. And he really, now you said this earlier, that it had been that they were going to do this nominating virtually at the beginning of August, which was mm-hmm. August 7th or something like that. If mm-hmm. that were the case, then you're literally only about a week out from that nomination.
Right. At that point. Now that puts them, I mean, the Democrats in a really tough spot. So essentially, they're thinking to themselves, we got to really work on him and chip away this idea that it's best for him, like, to put this, implant this idea into his mind that you could be a statesman and step aside and do the service to your country by stepping aside. And of course, do the service to your party, which is really what they really mean by that. They don't, I think, care about the other thing. But now, if he is in quarantine protocol, they're not going to get to him. They're going to have 10 or 7 days less to chip away at him, and he's going to come back probably feeling a little bit more refreshed, giving him the false hope that he really doesn't need to step aside. This may actually be a really bad thing for the ones that are trying to convince him to step aside. This is going to be really difficult for the change his mind now.
And it controls the messaging too. People could still text him, but he's not going to be, nobody's going to be meeting with him. You know, he's going to be completely isolated with probably just Jill, the only one talking to him for the next week.
Yeah, well, I mean, he takes like 3 or 4 day weekends anyway, where no one talks to him. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's like basically a double weekend for him.
Yeah, very true. But still, no interviews, no nothing. And so, yeah, I really do believe that this is, regardless of whether COVID or whatever it is, this is an opportunity for him, or a plan for him, whichever way you want to look at it, for him to step out. And this is the opposite. So this is like right wing. You know, Twitter has been saying, oh, this is him getting ready to step down. And I really think it's the opposite. This is him hunkering down, and really everybody around him hunkering down around him to say, no, 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 no. He's fine. He just has to get through this next week or so, and then he'll get back on the campaign trail, and then it'll be really too late to do anything about it.
Yeah, I think his campaign has said they're mild symptoms. And he's not stepping down. Like, those are the two things, the only things that they've said by this.
Yeah.
Now, keep in mind, he's 81, 80, yeah. 81. Has he turned 81 yet? I get it mixed up sometimes.
I think it's November that he turns 82.
Oh, 82. Got it. Yeah. Okay. Not good at that age. Anyone that age getting COVID, that's a terrible thing, because the older you are, the harder it is to shake off. I mean, anything could happen between now and then, but he does have the world's best doctors working on him, which is a good thing, but still not a great thing to have to battle. So to say this quarantine lasts 7 days, it could very last longer.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And you know what? Who knows? Maybe while he's on the beach, he says, is this really worth it? Maybe that's how he has his change of heart. I doubt it. Again, he's old and stubborn and does not want to give that power up that he worked for, quote unquote. So I think the Democrats have just pretty much now realized they just locked in Joe Biden because there's nothing they can do unless they do it by force against his will, which they don't want to do.
Yeah, here's the couple headlines you're referring to. Biden tests positive for COVID, cancels events amid symptoms. White House says Biden unmoved by discussions with Schumer and Jeffries. And then Biden campaign sees no change in odds of him being nominee. So I think you and I are in the minority, because a lot of people are saying, no, this is how he starts to step out. But I don't think so.
I wonder if he got it here in Detroit. He was just here on Friday, possibly. I think there's a chance that it happened there. Who knows? All right, we got another hour of the Annie Fry Show. If you want to hop online real quick, the YouTube live chat poll, America's Best Days Ahead or Behind Us. Got some more time to do that. You can find me online, Ryan Recker Radio, at Ryan Recker on Twitter. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to 97.1 FM Talk. Listening to 97.1 FM Talk. Ryan Wiggins, welcome back.
Thank you.
Got some work done. Did you have some Reese's Pieces or some sort of buttercups?
No, I lament that. I did have a granola bar.
Oh, okay. Not as exciting, really.
No, it's much,
much drier.
It looks like it's more healthy, but really when you add as much sugar as they do to those things, why don't I just eat a Snickers?
Yeah, you might as well. So we had some really great interviews there, and I really enjoyed them. But I'm going to go back to that one story on the Hill. Biden's health offers grim counter-programming to the RNC. You know, I never really considered that until this one piece that came out by Alex Gancitano, but basically says, look at the juxtaposition here. You have a bunch of energized Republicans in Milwaukee for their convention. Very excited. They get to announce their vice presidential nominee, which is J.D. Vance, who's going to be running mate of Donald Trump, who gets the big speech tonight. On the counter side, you have a party that's trying to get their leader to step down, won't step down, gets COVID. And there couldn't be a bigger contrast between the two different candidates for president of the United States right now. And I think it was Van Jones. Van Jones is coming up with some good quotes lately, isn't he? He says, today is a terrible day. If you pull it back and look at this thing, strength versus weakness, a bullet couldn't stop Trump. A virus just stopped Biden. And that is the compare and contrast between the two parties. Normally, you would hope that this was happening closer to the election day. We're still pretty far out. We're like 110 days away or something like that. 109. I forgot what the exact number is. But I know anything can change between now and then. But man, it could not look worse for the Democratic Party right now.
I'm going to ask you a question based on the news, because this broke yesterday about this time. You know, we were on the air when we heard, oh, he's got COVID. He's going to be dropping out of events and things. And so we were reporting that. I don't know that we actually discussed this, though, which has become, of course, the topic of discussion. Mm-hmm. Is COVID, let's put COVID aside. Put it aside that whether he actually has COVID or not, because everybody's speculating. Oh. Everybody's speculating. Does he actually have COVID?
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So let's just put that debate aside and say, regardless of whether he does or not, is this a ruse or an opportunity, whichever one, for him to step out of the public limelight and then, you know, say, oh, you know, this was an opportunity. Like, I had to really examine my health here. So this is would be step one of him moving out of the nomination. Or is it the opposite, where he's stepping out of the limelight and he gets a free 7 to 10 days here where he doesn't have to do any interviews? And then he's a week and a half closer to the nomination.
You know what? Until you said that, I never once questioned if he had COVID or not. My mind went in a different direction. My mind went, wow, what a contrast between when Donald Trump got it and now when Joe Biden has got it. When Donald Trump got it, people were like celebrating. It was, this is what you get, you know, the type of, they were like happy in a way. It was actually really sad. And he came back and, we can go back and revisit this later. But to go back to your other question, I think that he's bitter. He's an old man and he's stubborn. He just doesn't want to step aside. I don't think this is them trying to transition him out like it's some sort of planned. We're going to try to script this in a way that is logical and a way that people will buy it. I don't think that's the case. I just think that he honestly probably got COVID. And he's continuing to do these interviews, and the interviews are not flattering to him. They're exactly how you think they would go, and people aren't liking him anymore. So it's not going to hurt him being away. In fact, he's going to go back to the basement strategy that he took back in this 2020 election that, you know, seemed to work out for him in some ways.
I'm looking at the calendar here. If he does, let's say he quarantines for 7 days, or you could go even further and go to 10. I don't even know what the protocols are because I thought he was vaccinated. I didn't know you could get COVID when you were vaccinated, and I know he is. But apparently you can. I didn't know that. I'm not a doctor. but let's say that he does use this full quarantine, which he will. You know, he's not going to do interviews for the next week. I don't think you see him pretty much the entire Monday through Friday of next week, nor the end of this week, obviously. That means that he gets all the way through July 29th before he may even start doing this again.
Wow.
So that is an amazing free pass for him. And he really, now you said this earlier, that it had been that they were going to do this nominating virtually at the beginning of August, which was mm-hmm. August 7th or something like that. If mm-hmm. that were the case, then you're literally only about a week out from that nomination.
Right. At that point. Now that puts them, I mean, the Democrats in a really tough spot. So essentially, they're thinking to themselves, we got to really work on him and chip away this idea that it's best for him, like, to put this and plant this idea into his mind that you could be a statesman and step aside and do the service to your country by stepping aside. And of course, do the service to your party, which is really what they really mean by that. They don't, I think, care about the other thing. But now, if he is in quarantine protocol, they're not going to get to him. They're going to have 10 or 7 days less to chip away at him. And he's going to come back probably feeling a little bit more refreshed, giving him the false hope that he really doesn't need to step aside. This may actually be a really bad thing for the ones that are trying to convince him to step aside. This is going to be really difficult for them to change his mind now.
And it controls the messaging, too. People could still text him, but he's not going to be, nobody's going to be meeting with him. You know, he's going to be completely isolated with probably just Jill, the only one talking to him for the next week.
Yeah, well, I mean, he takes like 3 or 4 day weekends anyway, where no one talks to him. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's like basically a double weekend for him.
Yeah, very true. But still, no interviews, no nothing. And so, yeah, I really do believe that this is, regardless of whether COVID or whatever it is, this is an opportunity for him or a plan for him, whichever way you want to look at it, for him mm-hmm. to step out. And this is the opposite. So this is like right wing. You know, Twitter has been saying, oh, this is him getting ready to step down. And I really think it's the opposite. This is him hunkering down, and really everybody around him hunkering down around him to say, no, 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 no. He's fine. He just has to get through this next week or so, and then he'll get back on the campaign trail, and then it'll be really too late to do anything about it.
Yeah, I think his campaign has said they're mild symptoms. And he's not stepping down. Like, those are the two things, the only things that they've said by this.
Yeah.
Now, keep in mind, he's 81, 80, yeah. 81. Has he turned 81 yet? I get it mixed up sometimes.
I think it's November that he turns 82.
Oh, 82. Got it. Yeah. Okay. Not good at that age. Anyone that age getting COVID, that's a terrible thing, because the older you are, the harder it is to shake off. I mean, anything could happen between now and then, but he does have the world's best doctors working on him, which is a good thing, but still not a great thing to have to battle. So to say this quarantine lasts 7 days, it could very last longer.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah.
And you know what? Who knows? Maybe while he's on the beach, he says, is this really worth it? Maybe that's how he has his change of heart. I doubt it. Again, he's old and stubborn and does not want to give that power up that he worked for, quote unquote. So I think the Democrats have just pretty much now realized they just locked in Joe Biden because there's nothing they can do unless they do it by force against his will, which they don't want to do.
Yeah, here's the couple headlines you're referring to. Biden tests positive for COVID, cancels events amid symptoms. White House says Biden unmoved by discussions with Schumer and Jeffries. And then Biden campaign sees no change in odds of him being nominee. So I think you and I are in the minority, because a lot of people are saying, no, this is how he starts to step out. But I don't think so.
I wonder if he got it here in Detroit. He was just here on Friday, possibly. I think there's a chance that it happened there. Who knows? All right, we got another hour of the Annie Fry Show. If you want to hop online real quick, the YouTube live chat poll, America's Best Days Ahead or Behind Us. Got some more time to do that. You can find me online, Ryan Recker Radio, at Ryan Recker on Twitter. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to 97.1 FM Talk. Listening to 97.1 FM Talk. Ryan Wiggins, welcome back.
Thank you. Hopefully
you got some work done. Did you have some Reese's Pieces or some sort of buttercups?
No, I lament that. I did have a granola bar.
Okay. Not as exciting, really.
No, it's much
drier.
It looks like it's more healthy, but really when you add as much sugar as they do to those things, why don't I just eat a Snickers?
Yeah, you might as well. So we had some really great interviews there, and I really enjoyed them. But I'm going to go back to that one story on the Hill. Biden's health offers grim counter-programming to the RNC. You know, I never really considered that until this one piece that came out by Alex Gancitano, but basically says, look at the juxtaposition here. You have a bunch of energized Republicans in Milwaukee for their convention. Very excited. They get to announce their vice presidential nominee, which is J.D. Vance, who's going to be running mate of Donald Trump, who gets the big speech tonight. On the counter side, you have a party that's trying to get their leader to step down, won't step down, gets COVID. And there couldn't be a bigger contrast between the two different candidates for president of the United States right now. And I think it was Van Jones. Van Jones is coming up with some good quotes lately, isn't he? He says, today is a terrible day. If you pull it back and look at this thing, strength versus weakness, a bullet couldn't stop Trump. A virus just stopped Biden. And that is the compare and contrast between the two parties. Normally, you would hope that this was happening closer to the election day. We're still pretty far out. We're like 110 days away or something like that. 109. I forgot what the exact number is, but I know anything can change between now and then. But man, it could not look worse for the Democratic Party right now.
I'm going to ask you a question based on the news, because this broke yesterday about this time. You know, we were on the air when we heard, oh, he's got COVID. He's going to be dropping out of events and things. And so we were reporting that. I don't know that we actually discussed this, though, which has become, of course, the topic of discussion. Mm-hmm. Is COVID? Let's put COVID aside. Put it aside that whether he actually has COVID or not, because everybody's speculating. Oh. Everybody's speculating. What, does he actually have COVID?
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So let's just put that debate aside and say, regardless of whether he does or not, is this a ruse or an opportunity, whichever one, for him to step out of the public limelight and then, you know, say, oh, you know, this was an opportunity. Like, I had to really examine my health here. So this is would be step one of him moving out of the nomination. Or is it the opposite, where he's stepping out of the limelight and he gets a free 7 to 10 days here where he doesn't have to do any interviews, and then he's a week and a half closer to the nomination?
You know what? Until you said that, I never once questioned if he had COVID or not. My mind went in a different direction. My mind went, wow, what a contrast between when Donald Trump got it and now when Joe Biden has got it. When Donald Trump got it, people were like celebrating. This is what you get, you know, the type of, they were like happy in a way. It was actually really sad. And he came back and, we can go back and revisit this later. But to go back to your other question, I think that he's bitter. He's an old man and he's stubborn. He just doesn't want to step aside. I don't think this is them trying to transition him out like it's some sort of planned. We're going to try to script this in a way that is logical and a way that people will buy it. I don't think that's the case. I just think that he honestly probably got COVID and he's continuing to do these interviews, and the interviews are not flattering to him. They're exactly how you think they would go, and people aren't liking him anymore. So it's not going to hurt him being away. In fact, he's going to go back to the basement strategy that he took back in this 2020 election that, you know, seemed to work out for him in some ways.
I'm looking at the calendar here. If he does, let's say he quarantines for 7 days, or you could go even further and go to 10. I don't even know what the protocols are, because I thought he was vaccinated. I didn't know you could get COVID when you were vaccinated, and I know he is, but apparently you can. I didn't know that. I'm not a doctor. but let's say that he does use this full quarantine, which he will. You know, he's not going to do interviews for the next week. I don't think you see him pretty much the entire Monday through Friday of next week, nor the end of this week, obviously. That means that he gets all the way through July 29th before he may even start doing this again.
Wow.
So that is an amazing free pass for him. And he really, now you said this earlier, that it had been that they were going to do this nominating virtually at the beginning of August, which was mm-hmm. August 7th or something like that. If mm-hmm. that were the case, then you're literally only about a week out from that nomination.
Right. At that point. Now that puts them, the Democrats in a really tough spot. So essentially, they're thinking to themselves, we got to really work on him and chip away this idea that it's best for him, like to put this and plant this idea into his mind that you could be a statesman and step aside and do the service to your country by stepping aside. And of course, do the service to your party, which is really what they really mean by that. They don't, I think, care about the other thing. But now, if he is in quarantine protocol, they're not going to get to him. They're going to have 10 or 7 days less to chip away at him. And he's going to come back probably feeling a little bit more refreshed, giving him the false hope that he really doesn't need to step aside. This may actually be a really bad thing for the ones that are trying to convince him to step aside. This is going to be really difficult for the change his mind now.
And it controls the messaging too. People could still text him, but he's not going to be, nobody's going to be meeting with him. You know, he's going to be completely isolated with probably just Jill, the only one talking to him for the next week.
Yeah, well, I mean, he takes like 3 or 4 day weekends anyway, where no one talks to him. So,
yeah,
I mean, it's like basically a double weekend for him.
Yeah, very true. But still, no interviews, no nothing. And so, yeah, I really do believe that this is, regardless of whether COVID or whatever it is, this is an opportunity for him, or a plan for him, whichever way you want to look at it, for him to step out. And this is the opposite. So this is like right wing. You know, Twitter has been saying, oh, this is him getting ready to step down. And I really think it's the opposite. This is him hunkering down, and really everybody around him hunkering down around him to say, no, 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 he's fine. He just has to get through this next week or so, and then he'll get back on the campaign trail, and then it'll be really too late to do anything about it.
Yeah, I think his campaign has said they're mild symptoms. And he's not stepping down. Like, those are the two things, the only things that they've said by this.
Yeah.
Now, keep in mind, he's 81.
Yeah.
81. Has he turned 81 yet? I get it mixed up sometimes.
I think it's November that he turns 82.
Oh, 82. Got it. Yeah. Okay. Not good at that age. Anyone that age getting COVID, that's a terrible thing, because the older you are, the harder it is to shake off. I mean, anything could happen between now and then, but he does have the world's best doctors working on him, which is a good thing, but still not a great thing to have to battle. So to say this quarantine lasts 7 days, it could very last longer.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And you know what? Who knows? Maybe while he's on the beach, he says, is this really worth it? Maybe that's how he has his change of heart. I doubt it. Again, he's old and stubborn and does not want to give that power up that he worked for, quote unquote. So I think the Democrats have just pretty much now realized they just locked in Joe Biden, because there's nothing they can do unless they do it by force against his will, which they don't want to do.
Yeah. Here's the couple headlines you're referring to. Biden tests positive for COVID, cancels events amid symptoms. White House says Biden unmoved by discussions with Schumer and Jeffries. And then Biden campaign sees no change in odds of him being nominee. So I think you and I are in the minority, because a lot of people are saying, no, this is how he starts to step out. But I don't think so.
I wonder if he got it here in Detroit. He was just here on Friday, possibly. I think there's a chance that it happened there. Who knows? All right, we got another hour of the Annie Fry Show. If you want to hop online real quick, the YouTube live chat poll, America's Best Days Ahead or Behind Us. Got some more time to do that. You can find me online, Ryan Recker Radio, at Ryan Recker on Twitter. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to 97.1 FM Talk.